You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Well, from one star to another, we're excited to be, first of all, back with you for the second hour, of course, but even more excited to have before you, at the top of the second hour, the one and only Sean Bergen. Saturday evening, November 7th, we're live, unrehearsed, and uncensored, and we prove that every night, I think. Sean Bergen, former television newsman. He told the truth and landed with us, and we're all the better for it. And every time we're able to have Sean on, it's a show that can't be missed. Sean, welcome back.
Great to be here, James, as always.
Well, we got a lot to talk about, my friend, so let's just get down to it. I want to start with the GOP debates. So a lot's been made about the GOP debates, particularly the last one that was held in all places of Boulder, Colorado. Now, I can't for the life of me, a party that receives so much of its voter base from the South, and I guess you could say maybe the Midwest, you look at the places where they've had their debates, Cleveland, Ohio, somewhere in California, the most recent one in Boulder, Colorado, hosted by CNBC. The next one's coming up in a couple of days in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, hardly Republican bastions of support. So perhaps you could explain that one to me as well, Sean, being in media, what exactly their angle is on that. But the most recent debate has been the one that they've cried foul over the most. As a television newsman yourself, Sean, what was your take on the CNBC moderators?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'll tell you, you know, if this was just an encyclopedic, clear-cut case of liberal bias in the media. I mean, it was so outrageous and so over the top and so arrogant and condescending, and the liberal, it was just dripping with liberal hostility. It was so bad that their own colleagues in the liberal news media had to come out and criticize the moderators, John Horwood, Becky Quick, and Carl Quintanilla. The questions were absolutely ridiculous, and it was Ted Cruz who first really went right back at him, as he should have. And he opened up the door for the rest of the Republican candidates to really turn CNBC and their moderators into an absolute laughingstock. And if people want to see what real liberal bias looks like, that's the way to do it, because it's liberal bias takes many forms. It quite often involves the stories that are covered, the stories that are not covered at all, but also the tone and the tenor of the questions that are being asked of a Republican or conservative or Tea Party leaders. And, you know, I mean, at every step and every turn, it was clear that they were out to get these guys. They were not in the they were not in the engaged in the act of trying to inform their viewers or inform the public. They wanted to bash the Republicans and ridicule them and mock them so that they could go back to whatever cocktail party they'd be attending that night, and their liberal pals in the media would slap them on the back for going after the Republicans.
That had to be the only objective they had, because it was so outlandish. The only thing they could have been shooting for was to be patted on the back when they went to the next cocktail party. Bill O'Reilly, who is increasingly sounding like a co-host of the Political Cesspool, if you watch some of his takes on recent events, he brought this out in one of the questions of Ben Carson. They couldn't ask him a question pertaining to his view on homosexuality without doing it with eyes squinted and sneering, "Your view on homosexuality." It was just, I couldn't watch it all. And another thing is, I mean, they're having these things now. Did anyone know that there are still eight more Republican debates? I guess they're going to start having them every other day or something. But this one, it was the worst of the three they've had so far. And if it gets any worse than this, I guess going back to Fox Business, it'll probably be marginally better. But this was something. If you had been on there, Sean, people value your commentary on this program so much because you have been an insider with the media. If you had been moderating that debate or been one of the moderators, what would you have done differently?
Oh, my goodness. Well, look, I mean, the primary goal of a journalist is to inform the public. So you want to ask questions that are going to illuminate the positions that each of these candidates has on substantive issues. You don't go after Ben Carson and say, how on earth could you, someone who might be opposed to gay marriage on your religious beliefs and convictions, how on earth could you serve on the board of a corporation that doesn't treat gays fairly? I mean, they go to any length to demonize these candidates. Those questions were formulated well in advance of the debate. And when you're sitting around the table with the moderators and the producers and the people who are coming up with those questions, that's the point where I would have raised my hand and said, "Wait a minute. You know, let's do this like journalists. Let's not do this like a bunch of liberal ideologues and a bunch of liberal hacks who are out to further our agenda by diminishing, demeaning, mocking, and treating with outright hostility, potential or presidential candidates." And the place to do that is around the editorial meeting. That's quite often where guys like me will get into trouble in a liberal newsroom. And I've been there. I've been there on many, many subjects. And the looks you get, the comments you get, you realize very quickly that if you continue down that path, your job is on the line. I probably never, ever would have made it to the debate stage had I been sitting around in that editorial room crafting these questions with these guys. I would have to bow out in good conscience.
Well, and another thing, a great answer, by the way. And another thing is, you know, what in the first place is the GOP doing consenting to having one of their debates being moderated by CNBC in the first place? You might as well have just gone to MSNBC and had Rachel Maddow and Keith Olbermann do it. You know, because I can tell you the Democrats aren't letting Fox News do it. They're not letting Bill O'Reilly do it. You know, so there's that. You got to wonder what in the world the Republican base. And listen, I am a paleo conservative. I am a authentic conservative, however you want to frame it. So I don't have any love lost for the Republican establishment. I am not riding to their defense. But I mean, you just wonder what they thought would happen when they turned it over to a network like CNBC to begin with. But we'll see what happens going forward. And they're talking about perhaps pulling out of a future debate with MSNBC. We'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, they keep subjecting themselves to this stuff, James. And we had this conversation not long ago about a potential interview with you with NBC. And, my advice to you at that time was you've got to be careful. You know, you're going into the lion's den. You're going into a viper pit with these guys because they have one objective in mind, and that is to destroy you. That is it. And you just ask yourself, like, what is it going to take for the Republicans to finally wake up and say, all right, if that's the route you want to take, then the next Democrat debate, we'll agree to that if the Democrats agree to have, Rush Limbaugh, Charles Krauthammer, and Mark Levin moderate one of their debates. Or James Evans.
Yeah, well, apparently they have better sense than Reince Priebus on that one. And again, I'm not defending the Republican Party. God knows I don't care much about them. I am a conservative. But nevertheless, if they had the true best interests of their base at heart, they would have done more to protect their candidates from this sort of nonsense, because it does make the candidates and the party look clownish just to be involved with something that amateurish. But anyway, we talked to a newsman about that. When we come.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Extendovite really works. Here is what people are saying.
A year ago, I was realizing that I was in serious problems with my heart. You know, I had these chest pains and so on. I realized that I had to do something and quick. I didn't want to go the medical route. So I started in doing some investigating, and somebody told me about these heart drops. I got on the heart drops prescribed dosage. Within 2 weeks, I immediately started seeing the results. This is working. I'm going to stick with it. I can't deny the fact that when I got on the heart drops initially, there was immediate help, an immediate turnaround.
To get your Extendovite, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Many of you have heard me talk about my vigor score. You say, Sam, what on earth is all this vigor stuff about? Well, vigor is defined as zest for life, your strength in body and mind, your energy levels. It's kind of all wrapped into a term called vigor. Would you like to improve your vigor score? Well, you got to first take the free test. Get a hold of Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com or call Kurt Cosby at 801-669-2211. I took the test, got a 13 out of 32. Horrible, huh? But I worked on it with Kurt with some natural help and healing, and before you know it, now I've got an astounding 29 out of 32 on the vigor score. Can you tell by the way I talk? Oh, yes, my zest for life has never been better. Get a hold of Kurt Cosby. That's 801-669-2211. And take your free vigor test today, and you can learn where you stand. And then you can work on improving it and take the test again. And, oh, compare the results. You will be delighted. Get a hold of Kurt Cosby. Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com or 801-669-2211 for your free vigor score test today.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the Temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages. American Heritage School in American Fork.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
We really do have to shift gears because our time with Sean is both precious and limited. Sean Bergen, everybody. But Sean, I was talking with Sam during the break, and a good question, two-part question. Number one, do you think that you, in your capacity as a former television newsman, could get in touch with the campaigns of any of these candidates? And if not, why is it that the enemies of their supposed issues can get in touch with them and gain access to them so easily? And not only that, they're willing to spend hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, to advertise on these very same networks that seemingly hate them and everything they stand for.
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. You know, I could probably get in touch with the campaigns, but I can't do much for them because I don't have that big of a platform. And that's what these networks have, is that they have reach. And these candidates want to be able to reach voters. Now, they probably know that they're not going to be able to switch over liberals or Democrats. But there are a lot of independent voters out there who do still watch these networks. And I think those are the people who they want to reach. The fact of the matter is, you know, outside of Fox, all the rest of the American media landscape, virtually 90% of it is, are liberal news stations. And so, you know, when you hear Ben Carson say, you know, why do we even do this on TV? Let's go right to Facebook. Let's do it online. Let's do it on the internet. Let's do it with, you know, with Breitbart TV. Let's do it to media outlets that are a little more friendly to our message so that we can actually get that message out unfiltered, unobstructed to Americans, because conservatism works every time it is tried, every time it is attempted, and it makes a lot of sense to people when it's put to them in a fair, objective, and balanced way.
All right, fair enough, Sean. We will, of course, keep tabs on this next debate that's coming up this week in Wisconsin. And before that, though, I guess right now, is it? I don't know what time it airs because I'm always at work. Saturday Night Live, talking about NBC, Donald Trump is hosting Saturday Night Live. Is it tonight? I believe it's tonight.
It is. Yes, it is indeed. And, you know, predictably, his appearance has drawn the ire of, you know, the open borders crowd, who want to paint him as a racist because he wants to secure our southern border. And so yep. they're all up in arms and protesting his appearance and, you know, sending nasty grams to NBC. How dare you have this guy on, blah, blah, blah. You know, if the roles were reversed and this was a, Bernie Sanders and conservatives or Tea Party types started protesting his appearance, you know, there'd be all kinds of accusations about shutting down free speech and freedom of expression. You know, the really same argument that that Quentin Tarantino has been posing after the huge backlash with response to the remarks that he made at an anti-cop rally there not long ago.
Sean, you must have worked in the media before, because that was the most flawless and perfect segue I've ever heard, as we need to transition into the Quentin Tarantino comments. Basically, break that down. Now, that actually happened in New York, your neck of the woods, unbeknownst to you, or else perhaps you would have been there.
That actually happened the night of the 11th anniversary show. And yes, you're right. Had I not been appearing on that, I probably would have been out there myself earlier in the day. Although his attendance was not was kept hush. It wasn't widely advertised. I think he was kind of a surprise guest, just showed up at the last minute. But you know, here he was out there referring to cops as murderers, and he claims that his remarks were misconstrued. He did this, of course, just a few days after a New York City cop was gunned down. Officer Randolph Holder, was killed. And here comes Tarantino now with his truly sensitive remarks, right? I mean, you know, after Gabrielle Giffords was shot by Jared Loughner, the left immediately went after Sarah Palin in some just dramatic overreach and trying to tie her into that assassination attempt. And there were all kinds of calls from the institutional left to for a new civility, right? So, but the problem is, when the shoe's on the other foot, there is nothing whatsoever civil about these people at all. They are as vicious, as underhanded, as devious, and mean-spirited as anyone you're ever going to meet, and they absolutely refuse to apply the same standards to themselves that they ask everyone else to adhere to.
The Quentin Tarantino thing, Sean, so he goes to this rally, and of course I agree with everything you just said, but he goes to this rally in New York, very public. I mean, it made national news, obviously. It's still making news because he's doubled down and refusing. I mean, I do give him some credit. Listen, if you're gonna go all in on something, don't apologize for it. I will give him credit for that. He shows a lot more courage than a lot of conservatives who say something and then immediately apologize and grovel. Of course, you don't have to apologize and grovel when you're coming out in support of something like the Black Lives Matter movement, which I think can very effectively be argued is, in fact, not just an extremist movement in the real sense of the word, but a terrorist movement. But this is a movement that is entirely sanctioned and supported by both the federal government and the mainstream media. So on one hand, okay, I disagree with him entirely. I think he's pathetic. He's repulsive. But at least he didn't apologize. But again, it's very easy not to apologize when you're being propped up by all of your peers in Hollywood, the federal government, and the mainstream media. But he goes on here, and we have a clip on our website. We probably should have had it queued up for this. That's my fault. But he's saying that essentially the police officers are murderers. And he paints with a pretty broad brush here. Police officers are murderers. This is a recurring theme on this show as the Black Lives Matter movement has become more, prominent. And that these people, so I guess Darren Wilson, who defended his life very clearly, is a murderer in the eyes of Quentin Tarantino. And this will not cost him anything, Sean. Not that I'm saying if you have a dissenting viewpoint, you should have your livelihood stripped, but this will only benefit him. Of course, that's one of the left's tactics. They go after your livelihood if you say something that they disagree with. And I'm not saying that should happen, but he risks nothing here.
No, not at all. But he'll be embraced. He'll continue to be embraced by that leftist bubble that exists in Hollywood. Look, Tarantino and the moderators from CNBC are all part of the same cabal. It's what Andrew Breitbart used to refer to as the institutional left. That would include the liberal media, academia, entertainment complex, and their lovers in the Liberal Democrat Party, and all the charlatans that come along with that, the poverty pimps, the race hustlers, the community organizers, and anyone else who's managed to carve out a career for themselves in the civil rights industry. Black Lives Matter, of course, being one of them, and they've gone way beyond carving out a niche in the race business. They are openly calling for the execution of cops, and it sounds like some pretty mentally disturbed people are actually following through on that. So, yes, Tarantino can make those kind of remarks. He exists in an intellectual and an ideological bubble out in Hollywood. It's the same one that exists in Berkeley, California, Hyde Park, Chicago, parts of Washington, D.C., and Manhattan's Upper West Side. They all pile around together. They all think the same way. They all, they're all a bunch of self-congratulatory ideologues who, for whom, they'll go to any length to take down their political opponents because everything is politics with them. Their whole persona, the whole sense of who they are is all bound up in this crackpot leftist ideology that saw its glory days half a century ago. Now, he might not be punished by his peers in Hollywood, but I can tell you there are 1,000 law enforcement organizations in this country who have gathered steam with the boycott of his next movie, The Hateful Eight. And it remains to be seen now if the police officers, their friends, their families, and the American public are going to support them in the boycott of this film.
Well, that's something that's ongoing right now. I hope that it does. I hope that they do, and I hope that it bombs. Sean Bergen, everybody. Sean, thank you for being with us. We can't wait for the next time.
Look forward to it. Thanks very much, James.
Have a great night, my friend. For everybody else, stay tuned. Much more to come tonight as the political cesspool rolls on.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Are you a native son or daughter of the South who pleads the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin just outside Traveler's Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend. All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com. Your home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride.
Listen, do you hear that sound? It started low, but it's getting progressively louder. Into a crescendo, even louder. Irresistible, ending in an ear-splitting blast of mass disruption. That's the sound of America's economic and political systems crashing to the ground. But we have a plan. We will be ready to restore political sanity. We will be ready to answer the call of productive America. We will restore America's industrial base and put America back to work. We will shut down political correctness and restore decency and positive media to America. We will save our Constitution, our traditional way of life, our customs, and religion. We will restore sound money and crush the debt-based system of monetary slavery. And we will end America's foreign misadventures. We are the American Freedom Party, and we have a plan. Learn more about us, theamericanfreedomparty.us.
The Occidental Quarterly fills a unique niche in bringing together scholarly articles on a wide range of topics that are mired in political correctness elsewhere. It is edited by Professor Kevin McDonald, who's no stranger to listeners of the political cesspool. There are quite a few reasons for the precarious state of our civilization and our people, but one of the main ones is that we have lost the intellectual and moral high ground to a cultural elite that is hostile to our people and our culture. Those of us who are politically aware must understand that the elites dominating culture and the political process in the West are intellectually and morally bankrupt. TOQ is the key. Digital download subscriptions are only $30 a year. Subscriptions by first-class mail are only $60 a year. Go to TOQOnline.com and click on Subscribe Now. In addition to receiving fascinating and informative articles, you will also be supporting the work of scholars who are part of a community defending our people and our culture with the highest level of integrity and intellectual sophistication. That's TOQOnline.com. Subscribe now.
Oh, yeah, oh.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
A final word about Quentin Tarantino. We were talking with Sean Bergen a moment ago about how Quentin Tarantino just in the last few days addressed this public rally in New York, a rally against police, saying that he cannot remain apathetic to the news of murder. And that's, of course, when a cop protects himself from the savage thuggery of someone like Michael Brown. That's murder, I guess, in Obama's America. But at least Tarantino is consistent. At least he's an honest liberal. We know that he really abhors violence, and we can see that in the movie he makes, like Django Unchained and Inglourious Basterds, where there's absolutely no violence, right? Well, I would expect more of Tarantino. He was born in Tennessee. He's of English, Irish, and Italian descent. You would expect more from someone like that. But like so many whites who get a few shekels, you know, dangled in front of them in Hollywood or with the media or with their peers or with a corporation, he has totally betrayed his family, totally betrayed his heritage, totally betrayed his race by making these what they really are, they're fetish smut films like Django Unchained and Glorious Bastards. Now, these movies, which are his two most recent movies and two most heralded movies, I guess. Yeah, I like From Dusk Till Dawn. That was okay. Pulp Fiction was a big one for him. But these are the two that I guess he's most known for. And these movies feature the graphic and sadistic murders of countless white Southerners and Germans, respectively. Django Unchained, it's the white Southerners, and Inglourious Basterds, it's the Germans. It takes no courage to make movies for Jewish-run studios in which white Christians are portrayed as caricatures and cast as the villains. No courage at all. He's not brave, he's not edgy, he's not hip, he's a loser, he's an establishment hack. He supports the establishment by making movies like this. There's nothing unique about him at all. And, of course, he exhibits that same lack of bravery to come out in support of the Black Lives Matter terrorist group, an entity that is entirely sanctioned and supported by the federal government and mainstream media, as I mentioned to Sean Bergen. But when this whole thing came up about him and the Black Lives Matter endorsement, it triggered a memory of mine. In that one of the stars of the movie Inglourious Basterds, which was written and directed by Quentin Tarantino, is a man by the name of Eli Roth. We had the distinct honor a couple of years ago of being denounced by Eli Roth and if you don't know, Eli Roth, he's been in a couple of movies, but he's most well known for playing a savage Jewish soldier. His actual the name of his character in the movie Inglourious Basterds is the Bear Jew, who alongside Brad Pitt in that film brutally mutilates scores of Germans for laughs. We actually have a clip from that movie on our website tonight, thepoliticalcesspool.org. But Eli Roth, he also starred in Hostel. Or I don't know if he starred in it. I guess he wrote it or directed it. He was one of the principals of the Hostel movies, Grindhouse. All of his movies are degenerate. And he got very upset with me for having Hutton Gibson on the show. That's Mel Gibson's father. You know, Hutton Gibson's been on the show a few times. And we've made some big news with Hutton Gibson. And anyway, after Hutton Gibson, one of his appearances on the show, I can't remember which, Eli Roth took to Twitter, and he had a very ignorant and intolerant attack of yours truly, which stemmed from our support of Mel Gibson and the fact that Mel's father is a friend of ours. Well, Eli Roth tweeted a rant. I won't read the whole thing, but you can get the picture with this. Mel Gibson's father, Hutton Gibson, has given an interview on the white supremacist radio program, Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool program is devoted to racist, anti-Semitic, and far-right propaganda and is said to be the most popular white supremacist radio show in the United States. Well, it's like I always say, folks, anything worth doing is worth doing right. Right? Am I right? Anyway, in all seriousness, being attacked by perverts like Eli Roth is something that real men take pride in. I take a lot of pride in it. I don't apologize for it. I don't even explain myself because, frankly, I don't care. I don't care what Eli Roth, the Bear Jew, says about me or my work. I don't care. I don't lose sleep over it. I go to bed with a beautiful woman every night. I have two wonderful kids. I have people who love me. The people I care about me. I don't care what the Bear Jew says. And it's just that, you know, I have the same reaction when I get attacked by fellow degenerates and perverts like Perez Hilton. If you don't know who Perez Hilton is, he's the vile homosexual blogger who shot to fame by adding obscene graffiti to celebrity photographs. Of course, he's a big hit with the powers that be. He makes millions of dollars a year off of his filth. And by just doing these comics where he draws, you know, excrement and semen and other bodily fluids on the heads and faces of people that he hates, he's some sort of a big celebrity. Well, guys like that, you know, they get rewarded by the mainstream media. He appears constantly on television. He's put out two books from major publishing companies, et cetera, et cetera. He was actually asked to judge a Miss USA contest. We're talking about Perez Hilton now. Not Paris Hilton, but Perez Hilton. He was asked to judge a Miss USA contest. Excuse me. Asked to judge a Miss USA contest a few years back. You remember Carrie Prejean? Miss California, she was asked by Perez Hilton what she thought of homosexual marriage. He only asked her that question because he knew in advance that she was against it, as any normal person is. When she basically replied she doesn't think of it much, he went on his blog and called her all sorts of nasty names and got lots more of TV appearances as a result of this anti-Christian hate. Yes, just like the ADL and the SPLC, people like Eli Roth and Perez Hilton, they hate Christians, they hate Christianity, and they hate the political cesspool with a passion. And so I mean this, ladies and gentlemen, when I say and when I repeat that any good man, any leader, and there are precious few who lead better than we do or as good as we do, maybe none. You know, I'd put Jared Taylor as a contemporary, certainly Sam Bushman, but there's a handful. When you're tuning into the political cesspool, you're tuning into the voice of our movement. And there's been a lot that have come on since we've taken to the airwaves, a lot of internet shows, a lot of podcasts. A lot of them have drawn inspiration from us, and we'll never fully know the full extent to which the political cesspool has absolutely revolutionized our movement. Because we came on the radio and we proved that you can talk about these issues frankly and with candor and you will survive. You can survive if you don't apologize. And a lot of people have followed in our footsteps. But any good man, any legitimate leader knows that you need to have the right friends. And if you do the right thing and if you stand up for what's right without retreat, surrender, or apologies, and you make the right friends, with that comes the right enemies. And I'm very proud to have a long list of names on both sides of that ledger. We have friends like Sam and Jared and all of the other people who regularly appear on this show. I could go on and on and on and on and on naming them, but you know who they are. People like Kevin McDonald and Sam Dixon and you know. But we also have the right enemies. I am proud that we are denounced by Hollywood. I am proud that we are denounced by hate groups like the ADL and the SPLC. I'm proud that we're denounced by the mainstream media. And even though we're fixtures in the media, even though we constantly get attention, whether I take the interviews or not, they're thinking about us, they're reaching out to us, they're talking about us, they're trying to eviscerate us. I want that. We're right where we need to be. If you're not getting flack, you're not over the target. And the political cesspool is over the target every day on our website, every Saturday night on the radio, when we do it better than anyone else. You tune into this show, you're listening to the original, the biggest, and the best every week. And we thank you for your support because God knows, yes, because of God's grace, we have been allowed to grow and to prosper. But certainly, ladies and gentlemen, the audience, you make it possible. But it's just pretty uncanny, I think. We take to the airwaves back in 04, no support behind us. We're just doing it because we're passionate about these issues. And you fast forward 11 years, you look back on all of the things we've been through. That top 25 list we put out to you a couple of weeks ago on the 11-year anniversary show, we forgot about Eli Roth and Perez Hilton. We forget about so much that happens because so much happens. We'll be back to make more happen right after this.
Let's hang on and come back to the political cesspool right after these messages here on the Liberty News Radio Network.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Hello everyone, James Edwards here. Are you sick and tired of liberals and race hustlers and the media calling you a racist just because you oppose Obama's policies? Well, my friend, those days are over. After you read Racism Schmacism, you'll never again fear being called the R word. I invite you to discover why every conservative in America needs a copy of my explosive new book. Racism Schmacism has received much critical acclaim and will equip you with the key to unlock their socio-political nuclear bomb once and for all. Order your copy today by visiting the official website of the Political Cesspool radio program, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Proceeds of each sale go to help keeping our award-winning show on the air, and they make great gifts for your conservative friend or family member. Buy Racism Schmacism today at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.
Attention Liberty News Radio listeners. Hard-hitting talk radio has never been and never will be supported by the mainstream in America. Hard-hitting talk radio is taking on the mainstream press like never before. News the networks refuse to use is one of the best ways to educate people. We invite all liberty-loving Americans to join with us to restore the principles of our founding fathers and promote God, family, and country in the media and our lives. Please help spread the Liberty message with your generous donation. You can go online at libertynewsradio.com right now and make a donation online. Or call 801-756-9133 and make a donation over the phone. That's libertynewsradio.com and 801-756-9133. Make a donation today.
Welcome back to Get On The Show. Call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
I know what you're wondering, everybody. I know what you're wondering. Where's Keith? Right? Well, Keith is traveling back. Keith works, you know, like you heard Scoop. He couldn't even call in for his full segment in the first hour because he hadn't quite punched out from work yet. He had to call us back. We work for a living. Unlike our enemies, we actually work for a living. And so sometimes that gets in the way of what we do here on the radio program. But Keith is traveling back to Memphis tonight. And we will be calling Keith at the top of the third hour. Now, typically, the first hour, hour and change is Keith's time. And the last hour, hour and a half is Eddie's time. We're shaking it up here this week and next. Next week, Keith will be out of town to attend his son's wedding. And so Keith will be out entirely next week. And Eddie will be with us for the full show, along with Brother Nathaniel Kapner, Winston Smith, talking about that article we're working on that I made a mention of earlier in the program tonight. Well, anyway, so since we're shaking things up to accommodate everybody, we do have Eddie tonight, but just for a second, only for one segment, because Eddie is travel weary himself. If you'll remember, ladies and gentlemen, last Saturday, which was Halloween night, Eddie was here in the studio with us, as he always is, or most normally is. The very next morning, Sunday morning, Eddie took the red eye to New York, and he was going to compete in the New York Marathon. Eddie, did you make it to the start line on time? Did you finish that marathon?
Well, son, thanks to connections, people pulling some strings with the TCS New York Marathon, the My New York Roadrunners, and the St. Jude Heroes, yes, I was able to skirt around some red tape, get my packet, and get to the finish line, and I was tired. It was the best marathon, even though it was my slowest time. It was my greatest victory. James, I know you know, James, how many roadblocks I had to overcome. I injured my hip back in April in Nashville. Then it took me a long time to come get over that. Then I had that hellish upper respiratory infection. I hadn't been sick in years. Then I had that hellish intestinal infection. Then I had the bicycle wreck and cracked my little left kneecap and messed up my right shoulder, and I was good to go. And remember, James, I got that infection on my right foot. I had to have a little minor surgery on my right foot about 8 days before I went. So it was looking like that the stars didn't want the bombardier to go. But I went, and I finished the daggum thing, and I tell you, it was just sweet victory. I'm not kidding. And, you know, we got my blood pressure pretty much under control, too. You know, last year I had a lot of trouble with blood pressure dropping. Remember me telling you about that. But I did it, and, you know, and I'm so proud of doing that. I've worked so hard. But I'm going to tell you, I'm really, really happy, too, and thankful for all the people. Let me tell you what we did. I run, as you know, James, in our audience, I run with the St. Jude Heroes team here in Memphis, and I also run with the Breakaway Running for a Cause. I'm with the two different teams there. Breakaway Running for a Cause, the team that the people y'all belong to, I belong to y'all, belong to the cesspool, and some of the people the cesspool contributed. Our Breakaway Running for a Cause was the number one team in the United States. We got over the goal line with about 10 seconds to spare. We surpassed the number one team. We're the number one team in the United States. And our St. Jude Heroes team, I was in a tent with about 35 people. And the 35 people in just my tent inside the Charity Village at Fort Wadsworth on Staten Island, we raised over $500,000. You know, I raised money with the Breakaway team. I run with them for the Memphis St. Jude. And I've already got my commitment made there. The money I committed, thanks to the people donating money, paid off Nashville back in April, paid off the 5K St. Jude cancer run walk, which I was unable to run. It was the only run I've ever missed because that was the time I had that hellish intestinal virus. But it was, I cannot tell you how sweet the victory was. There was a lot of pain now. Around mile 19 and mile 20, right in there, my calves, my God, they hurt. I'm not kidding you, people. It feels like your calf muscles were ripping loose from the bone. It's just hellish pain. You know what I can't figure out, James? Is on my training runs, a month before the race, I did my longest training run. And then after, you know, when you do your long run preparing for a marathon, then you go in what they call the taper down. Your mileage starts decreasing. Well, my 22-mile run was like nothing. I know I could have done 10 more, could have done the ultra. but in no leg pain. But in the marathon, though, it ran between mile 19 and mile 19:21, right in there. The pain was just, it was really incredible. But I was so, so proud to finish. It's an experience. And it's an experience we had. They said that there was about, I forgot how many thousands and thousands of runners. I've heard over 50,000. And they said that there were over 2 million spectators. They were wall to wall. I stopped.
But, you know, they heard a political cesspool co-host was going to be running in that race, and they all showed up for you. You know that.
Well, of course. Well, I didn't want to brag, but I'm glad you brought it up, though. But yeah, exactly. Everybody, it was all I could see. Bombardier signs as far as you could look, man.
Now, what do you expect? But, I mean, this is the political cesspool. But, you know, actually, this is the truth. And I shared this with you, Eddie. Eddie got back in town on Wednesday. He flew up on Sunday morning, ran the marathon. He pretty much got out of the airplane in his running gear, went over to the start line with very little time to spare. Ran the marathon, stayed there till Wednesday, came back. I talked to Eddie a couple of days ago. And this is the truth, because we mentioned this on the show last week. We were talking about the fact that you were here a week ago tonight, actually at this very moment last week at this time. You had still not even gone up to New York, and of course the marathon was last Sunday. Well, because we talked about that last week on the show, I received emails from some of our listeners saying, a few of them were asking, hey, did Eddie make it? Did Eddie finish? Did the marathon go well? We had some people asking that. And then we had one guy that emails in fairly often, who actually took the initiative upon himself to go to the New York Marathon's website and find you. He found your bib number, found out when you finished, and was excited and said, hey, I found Eddie. Look at this. You know, congratulations. So I know a lot of people were thinking about it. We had talked about it last week, so I didn't want to say, okay, Eddie's going to try to get up to New York by in the morning and run this marathon. We'll let you know, and then not have you on this week to let people know how it finished. But long story short, our audience cares about it, so I wanted to provide a follow-up to that. I know you're only with us for this one segment. You're going to be with us for the bulk of the show next week. But you did make it to New York. You did finish. You ran. And that marathon, I looked at that route. You crossed. You ran all up and down and through Manhattan. You crossed one of the bridges. What bridge did you run over?
I'm telling you what. We crossed some incredible bridges. They're right out of the starting, right out of the gate, you cross what they call the Verrazano Bridge. And guess how long that bridge is across, James? Take a guess.
It's 2 miles.
You hit the
2 miles mark.
You
of a bridge.
Mile mark. And the up, because you have about a mile upward incline, and then you go down. And of course, the wind's always whipping. Then you have another bridge that they call, some people call it the 59th Street Bridge, and the other one is the Queensboro Bridge, which was the bridge from hell. My coach warned me about that. He said, "Man, you're old." He said, "Don't even wear your garment. Don't do your pace." And it was just bridge after bridge after bridge that Coach got to warn me about. But I made those bridges. I played it smart. I didn't do like I've done in the past. I didn't try to go out there and kill it. I just tried to survive. Survive there. I'll tell you, it was the experience of a lifetime. But I want the cesspool audience to know what they need to be really proud of is the money that the political cesspool raises. What we've done for St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. There's many, many causes out there, people, that are great. I wish I could participate in all of them, but there's just not enough money. There's not enough time. And I'm here to tell you, fundraising is really exhausting, especially if you do it the way I do, you know, with the bucket. But I want the cesspool people to know that's what we do. We're not these, you know, these hate mongers. And by the way, I'll say one more thing. You know, James, how we buy meals for the homeless. I was in a restaurant there, Hale and Hardy. It's right there on Madison Avenue. Really cool. You can hit the Empire State Building with a rock. Homeless guy came in. I knew he was faking because he comes up to the water pitcher they had out. You just help yourself with the water. He drank. My daughter counted. Oh, by the way, my oldest daughter, she's a saint. She went with me. She was exhausted as I was. I don't know how she did it. If she helped pull strings. She knows people up there. But anyway, he sat there and drank 5 glasses of water. So as he was leaving, I said, I can't let that guy go. I called him, and he was black as Ace of Spades, like Jesse Lee Pearson says, the black minister. Yeah, I said, "Hey, guy, would you are you hungry?" And to my surprise, he said, "Well, no, I'm not too hungry." And I was surprised. I said, "Would you like something to eat?" And at first he said no. He said, "Well, I guess so." I was surprised at how respectful he was. He came in. I bought him some soup, same soup. I told people to give him any kind of soup he wanted, get him whatever he wanted. He got a soup and a sandwich, which was delicious. I ate there. And I just couldn't let him go hungry. And that's what we're about. I want the people to know, I swear, we are not hate mongers. We do not hate people. We love our race. Now, if we're attacked, now we're going to attack and we're going to win one way or the other. We will win one way or the other. So do not screw with us. Don't attack us. Even though we're Christians, we're not these fake, spineless, jellyfish Christians. We are the King David Christians.
Look,
we are the
fight. I mean, the bottom line is this. We stand up explicitly and without reservations for our race. We put our family first. We put our faith first. We put our people first. But that's not to say that we don't have hearts and that we can't choose when to be charitable on our own accord. We just don't want the government telling us what we have to do. But Eddie Miller, the great egalitarian, that's him. But Eddie, we wanted to have you on in all seriousness. Just to give people an update, you'll be on next week. Eddie ran the marathon, came through victoriously, and then spent a couple of days in New York reveling in the celebration. We've got another marathon coming up later this year. We'll be back with the third.